The Competitive 40K Network presents Art of War.
Art of War.
Strategy and tactics. Discussions with the best players on the planet. Now your host, Nick Nanavati.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Art of War podcast. I am super excited today because we're going to talk about some super psychic-y boys and how they won the Cherokee Open. We have Noah Defer today talking about Thousand Suns. Noah, how are you doing?
I am doing all right. How are you doing, man?
I am great. I'm so excited because Thousand Suns are an army we haven't had on pretty much since the start of 10th edition. They had their debut, then they basically got nerfed, and basically no innovation has happened on them on that front. But it seems like they've been on the rise lately, and you have a Thousand Suns build that's done really well, the Cherokee Open, getting first place, and it's a little bit different to what we've been seeing do well. So I'm really excited to talk about all that.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
So this is part one of a two-part conversation. In part one, we're going to be talking about Noah. We're going to get to know him, his play style, how he got to be so proficient with the Thousand Suns, and what that actually looks like. We're going to go through his Thousand Suns army list and how it works strategically and what kind of cool plays he's pulling off with these Thousand Suns boys. Then we've got part two of our show, which you can find on AOW40K.com. That's our Patreon. You can do that and subscribe and get access to this episode along with 229 other episodes and our amazing Discord community. So if you're interested in that, we're going to be talking about Noah's list in detail, his matchups, the play-by-plays, what makes it all tick on the actual table. It's one thing to understand the list. It's another thing to play it, and no one's going to spill his secrets. Noah, are you ready?
I am absolutely ready. Let's get into it, man.
How did you get into Warhammer?
I started at the very end of 2020, I believe, playing some old-school kill team with my friends. The first models I ever picked up were some Admech Skitarii, which scared me very much on the painting side of things, but we stuck them together, went over to a friend's house, and basically learned with the old school kill team, which was pretty close to big 40K in terms of stats.
Awesome. So basically, kill team was the little gateway drug that got you into 40K, and then were you Thousand Suns right from the get-go in 2020?
I was not. No, like I said, I started with some Admech guys, and then I picked up some Death Guard, some of those old, easy-to-build Death Guard models to play with friends. And then it was when the Grey Knights versus Thousand Suns box came out in 9th edition. My friend was interested in Grey Knights, and I said, you know, Thousand Suns, they do look fun. I like the old mind bullets and everything, so I picked them up when that came out, and I've been playing them on and off ever since. I rotate between a couple armies I enjoy, but that's what's currently on the docket.
Nice. So easy transition, psychic mind bullets, looks to be fun. How did that go from I want to pick up casual Thousand Suns to winning super majors with Thousand Suns? What does the practice regime and progression as a player look like?
Well, a lot of the Thousand Suns specifically, I played them a good bit in 9th. I think it was the summer of 2022. I got the opportunity to do some research out of state and brought my models with me and played pretty competitively at a game store, and Thousand Suns was the first army. I actually joined some of the guys up in Montana going to the Boise Open in Idaho, and that was the first GT I attended with them. And I've gone back and forth. You know, I play a couple different armies, but in terms of really progressing with Thousand Suns, I find that playing different armies with different play styles, but then applying those play styles into every army you play. So I learned to play very defensive and cautious when I was playing GSC for a period after that, and learning to take all those lessons from different armies and applying them to every army is kind of how I grew better with them. And then more recently, I've picked them back up. I played them a little bit at the start of 10th, but I've been playing them more or less since the start of the year and just grinding out games, practices, RTTs, some smaller GTs up in my home area, and just working through it.
So you've been playing Thousand Suns pretty much all through 10th edition exclusively?
Not exclusive. I played them a little bit at the start, and then I took a couple months off at the start of 10th just because of schooling stuff, and I was pretty busy. And I played for probably 4 or so months up to the start of this year, 3 or so, Death Guard. I was going back and forth and really enjoying the new contagions and everything they worked. And I tend to have a bit of, I very much try to avoid mirror matches. So when a faction I'm playing gets a little bit too popular, I swap out and say, well, let's try something else fun. So I started playing them. I wrote my list at the beginning of January and put that exact list on the table, and I've played the exact same sense from there all the way to Cherokee.
Wow, talks about faction mastery. Let's talk about your journey a little bit, though, because you talked about how you don't want to play kind of the hot meta faction if there's going to be mirror matches and things like that, and Death Guard are semi-popular. What is that about your play style that, you know, you're so adverse to playing the mirror match?
I mean, in a sort of general idea, I just don't find mirror matches as, like, I love about Warhammer, playing it in every game feels different, and I'm having, how do I apply my rules for Thousand Sons into Eldar or Guard or any other matchup? But with the mirror, like, every time, like, when I played the Death Guard mirror last edition, it honestly sometimes just feels like a slog, and it's something I try to avoid. If a faction is super popular, I like to be playing my own thing. I don't like to walk up to a table and someone say, like, oh, wow, I just have to play this again because they've played it 8 times that tournament. So I try to avoid that the best I can, and that usually just means playing factions that aren't quite as popular.
Do you think that's to your advantage, like, within the tournament setting, because you're playing a faction, people don't have many reps into you?
I mean, that's fair. It definitely could be that if someone doesn't have as much experience in the Thousand Sons as they have versus Death Guard, just based on the popularity of the faction, it could provide some sort of strategic advantage. But I do also try to, as much as I can, every matchup, like, walk through every part of the army, try to remind everyone everything, because I understand that advantage. When I was playing GSC last edition, when they weren't super popular, it's also like, I want you to have the best game possible, so I'm going to go through literally everything and make sure you know. But at the end of the day, not having practice into an army still is not having practice into the army.
Yeah, and I appreciate that you're trying not to gotcha people with the shroud of rules around Thousand Sons, but, you know, as you said, you have to actually play the matchup to understand how all combos come together on the table. So with that said, what would you describe your playstyle as? Because, like, Death Guard and Thousand Sons, while they're both are in the Venn diagram of chaos factions, they play very differently to each other, and they pretty much always have. So how do you reconcile playing those two, and then even also AdMech? They're very diametrically opposed armies.
Yeah, so it kind of comes down to the basic way I see 40K, which is as fundamentally a resource game. Any army I play, be it Death Guard or Thousand Sons or GSC, it kind of comes down to, how can I pick up my opponent's resources while at the same time not particularly giving up anything I have? Thousand Sons, that comes in a lot of way with stuff like Magnus. You know, you force the screens out, you pick stuff up around the edges where they can't really do anything about it, and then you hit them at a point where after your turn, they're not going to have enough resources to come back. Same thing with kind of Death Guard. It's like, I want to trade around the edges, and you'll lose little things here and there. I'll toss a rhino for some points. But then when I hit someone with a 10-man Plague Marine squad that has fights first, I pick up their resource and I say, okay, well, the only thing you have in this area is something that's going to charge me, and I'm going to fight first and pick up another one of your resources. So in my head, I kind of see it of a game as, how much can I take from my opponent without letting them have anything real in return? So that's how I more or less view every army I play, is what tools do I have here to pick up my opponent's tools without losing anything serious on my behalf.
It's so interesting you described it as a resource management game, and, like, basically if you can kill their army fast enough and at a rate that they can't fight you back, you're winning the resource game, and you can leverage a material win into victory, basically. Are you playing to kill your opponent's army primarily, and the scoreboard falls into place?
Not, I wouldn't say primary. The way I sort of see it is, if I can't do what I'm talking about and pick up stuff, that's fine. Also, I'm sure we'll talk about, if I put 10 Zangors on a wall behind an objective and I say, if you want to charge me and take me off this point, that's fine. I'm just going to take your resource back in return, and I've given you something I don't really care about. That's a fine thing for me. And if they decide that trade is never worth it, I've played games for a long time where I've sat behind walls for 3 turns and not really done anything. And if I'm going to come out on the winning side of that, then I'm fine. We can both keep all our resources, because, you know, points are just as much a resource you have to manage as anything else. It just comes down to, if you're not going to do anything, I will sit there across from the table from you not doing anything as long as I have the advantage.
It's sort of 1,000 sons of you.
Yeah. It's sort of that point where, and this happened at Cherokee a couple times, where I don't get to sit there and score points and be happy when I'm the one who has to take the offensive play is kind of where things have to differ. But
so I think that's ultimately going to lead us into part two really nice, where we talk about how you actually have to play your strategy and adjust it for various games. Because it sounds like a large part of your game plan is identifying your win condition from the get-go, whether it is to start just holding your side of the board and telling your opponent to engage in the trade war, take you off of an objective, keep your primary lower, but then you counterstruck and start getting up the material, or if you can actually pick off the edges and kind of just bully them a little bit on the sides. And we'll get into kind of how you identify all that game to game to game, but on a more broad level, like, how do you actually do it? Do you go, this is my army, this is their army, and these are the interactions that matter? How do you actually decide what your strategy is going to be with your list?
The strategy for the list is pretty similar to what I think there was something I read that was actually talking about my list. The general idea is I give you nonsense I don't care about, which is a difference between my T-Sons list and a lot. And then you take it, and then I burn you while you stand on objectives, and then I take said objectives. The idea for the list is kind of, it plays very strongly into the style of how I like to play, which is I have a bunch of things that don't matter, aren't what I call real resources, to hand my opponent. And I just want to be the one who first gets the chance to pick up a real resource they have.
Makes sense. So basically, you want to be the good starter of a trade war. Like, you want to sacrifice a pawn to get a knight kind of thing. And let it snowball from there. So let's talk about your actual list. What, you know, if you can read it top to bottom, what did you take to Cherokee?
Yeah, so the start of the list, as always, this is Thousand Sons Cult of Magic. It's the only real thing we have. Is, of course, Magnus the Red, who is incredible. And I've been told to stop saying I'd pay more points for him because we don't want GW to do that to us. But it is Magnus the Red who does everything the army could ask for. Then I have Armin on foot. If I had the points, he'd be on disc, but that's how it turned out. Who leads a squad of 10 Flamer Rubrics. He gives the squad +1 to wound, and they just sort of annihilate things. I have an Exalted Sorcerer with the Umbralific Crystal. He leads the other squad of 10 Flamers, which lets them teleport once per game. It's the best version of a teleport because it's in my command phase, which means I know all my cards. I know everything when it happens. So he's leading a squad of 10. I have 2 Exalted Sorcerers on disc who fly around, have a little Flamer, do lots of useful stuff. They cast cabals, they do everything. And then the Infernal Master, who's leading the last squad of 5 Flamers. He has the Arcane Vortex enhancement. If you've played Thousand Suns, you've almost certainly seen this guy. He shoots, frankly, ridiculously hard. Like, he picks up, in the game, he did like 10 or so damage to a Catan before Feel No Pain. He just shoots ridiculously hard. Him and his 5 guys always walk on from the edge of the board. Then I have 1 Mutalith Vortex Beast. It's a super useful tool. It doubles the range of your rituals, and it's just kind of a brick to remove. And then last up, I have 2x10 Zangors, who are OC2 idiots that I adore, and 2x2 Chaos Spawn, who the 1,001 Suns ones have a 5-up invuln, which just makes them very annoying bricks of wounds. And that is the entirety of the list.
So on the offset, looking at it, it looks like every other 1,000 Suns list, and that's a gaggle of psychers led by Magnus, joined to Rubric Marines with some other stuff floating around. But I think the devil is in the details here, and I want to go kind of through it unit by unit. So we've got like 2 units of 10 Rubric Marines. Usually this is more divided into lots of 5-mans for that cabal point efficiency. So you have larger trading pieces that are not even necessarily trading pieces. They're these big bricks of like 300 plus points with a character attached, and they don't generate as many cabal points. What's your thought process behind including these larger units?
So, also kind of falls into my playstyle that I'm not generally a huge MSU type player. I like my real units to do real unit things, and then I like my junk to be the most junk possible.
MSU meaning multiple small units as an army style.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, the reason I do have the 5-man rubrics for the Infernal Sorcerer is more to buff the Infernal Sorcerer, not for them to actually be a unit. The way I kind of play with the rubrics is I don't treat them as trading. If I'm trading them away, which occasionally has to happen. You know, games don't always go perfect. That's not the position I want to be in. I want to be at the point where I'm only giving you the junk units. The way we kind of measure our list is in cabal points, and I have 18 cabal points in the list. The games I tend to win, I tend to still have 14 to 15 cabal points round five. I try my very best to never have to trade these units, and if I'm playing a game plan which doesn't want to trade them, if I want Armin to maximize the efficiency of plus one to wound, if I want my teleport to maximize the efficiency of the teleport, then I want them on the biggest units possible. I want them to be the most effective that they can be, and then let all the little MSU trading stuff be other things like Zangors and Spawn, which I can freely throw away without losing anything serious.
So it's about like magnifying the effectiveness of your buffs, reroll wounds on objectives, warp time, moving them twice, teleporting, you know, cross table and everything. So yeah, I totally get that the rubric means you're not the trade pieces in the game of Warhammer, and that's what the Zangors and Spawn are for. I'm surprised to see there's no Enlightened here. I feel like they're an amazing 45 points, three models, OC2 each, move 12, fly. What's your thought process on these Zangor and Spawn specifically?
So yeah, the general thought process when I was making the list is the couple Thousand Sons games that I had played this edition before this list, it felt like the army kind of slowed down the longer into the game it got, because all these other little things like the five-man rubric marines, like I said, you lose one, you're losing a unit, you're losing cabal points, it's slowing down your game plan. I wanted to fit, I put the core of the list down, which is everything else, and I wanted to fit as much junk as possible in it that didn't really hamper my army as a whole when it went down. So the two types of junk I have are the Chaos Spawn, which are sort of my replacement. I personally find them, I like them more than Enlightened. They serve about the same purpose, which is to be like the small units that go and do stuff. Even though Enlightened do have the 12-inch move, I find Spawn are about the same speed with their 8-inch move, because Spawn move through walls and Enlightened don't. And they kind of exist to be this brick that forces out what I call an actual combat resource from your opponent, because any non-combat resource will just lose combat to Spawn. Even like small type skirmishy units, a lot of times we'll just literally never do enough damage to kill Spawn, and Spawn will eventually kill them. It's not going to be quick, but like neither of you is going to go anywhere. And then, you know, obviously they have to charge into your Spawn and I get to shoot them. Same thing with Zangors. The idea is comparing them to Cultists or Enlightened, it comes down to that. How much OC can I put behind a wall so that an opponent can't walk five intercessors on? If they can just walk five intercessors on and tie the point, then I have to come back around from behind my wall and deal with them, and I put myself in the open position. If I have 14 OC behind a wall with Zangors, which is really what the critical OC, like the critical part of them are, they are OC2 bodies versus, and it's 10 OC2 bodies. So I put that all on an objective, and it again forces a real resource from my opponent in exchange for my junk thing, which is in the list for you to charge and kill so that I get your resource.
Makes a lot of sense. Basically, just letting Zangors die so that you can slam them with your rigmarines. But this is not, you know, Thousand Sons aren't the inventor of the trade war. Lots of armies try this approach. So eventually, you know, you throw Zangors on an objective, your opponent will throw their equivalent of Zangors on the objective, if it's Gaunt, Sisters, whatever. Maybe they charge you and then they kill you and you kill them back. And maybe it was even a trade down where they traded 100 points to kill your 65 points. At some point, your rubrics are exposing themselves to actually defeat your opponent. At that point, they're just a bunch of rubric marines, right? How are you staying alive once you've actually committed these resources?
The idea once you commit them is, again, it's I want to trade around the edges. And let's say I have a set of Spawn on objective and a set of Zangors, and you trade two real resources into me. What I want to do at that point is take every resource I can that will move quickly to run towards you. I'll double move Magnus. I'll teleport the rubrics to start picking up stuff on your side of the field. While at the same time, like the Armin squad or the Enlightened the Sorcerers on disc take care of the stuff that you've just traded into me. If we are playing that sort of tradey style game where you have the resources to do that, it kind of comes down to a point where I have to, you know, you trust the backfield to pick up the stuff that you just traded. and then I have to go out and take additional resources from my opponent to kind of get over that hump, because T-Sun start in a unit deficit. I have less units, less activations than my opponent. You kind of have to, if they're just going to play that trade game, you do have to take a sort of initiative, pick their stuff up that they gave to you, but go further and pick up more stuff that they weren't really planning on losing.
Right. So it's not so much as just reclaiming the land you just lost. You're reclaiming that land, that objective, and then also launching Magnus, and like the outflanking squad shows up, maybe rapid ingress it, or like the 10 Rubik Marines move and double move up the table or teleport up the table. And you're really laying some pressure and some pain onto your opponent while you're reclaiming your lost ground. So it's almost like a counter strike in that sense.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, like you mentioned, the one Rubric squad that teleports does get a 4-up invul from the Exalted Sorcerer, which means they have to put some substantial amount of something in to kill them. But sometimes it does happen where I have to throw a bunch of resources up, and some of them are going to get killed on the clapback. And, you know, that's how 40K is. As much as I'd like to never lose a unit I care about, I will have to trade things at some point. The idea is just that I've taken enough stuff that even if you pick up both squads of Rubrics, well, now Magnus is just going to walk over the rest of your army while my guy's at home, then just continue scoring me points.
So it seems to me like every Thousand Suns player has their own approach of figuring out the game, whether it's through raw damage or the screening element that kind of trades itself like you're doing. But it's all different ways of slicing the same pie. How are you doing your characters, right? Like, because everyone has their own unique approach to the character build. And it's just like arm on Magnus and pain coming my way. But what's your approach with it?
I mean, in terms of characters, the approach is like sort of on the same. I want them to get the maximum amount of value out on my unit. You know, stuff like the Exalted Sorcerer is kind of a unique thing that not a lot of people run. And I just find that I want a 10-man Rubric squad to have a crystal, and he's the best thing to put it on so that they get that. The characters are generally about supplementing the Rubrics and stuff, which are the big part of the army, the Rubrics and Magnus. Then the characters are there to provide it and make sure they can do their jobs. And sometimes I need to double move a character to see something, to shoot it with some indirect fire. But I kind of see characters as supplementing the Rubrics. I don't see them as like the reason you're taking the Rubrics is so that they're wounds for a character.
Interesting. So I feel like a lot of Thousand Suns players do view it as like you take 5 Rubrics, you attach them to the character, you get Cabal points on each gen, you get wounds and OC for your character does stuff, especially like for Infernal Masters. I know you have the one with the Orbiting Vortex. He slams so hard with that +1 strength, +1 damage relic. But I see lists that just run 3 because they're just awesome characters. Any thought to running more characters or kind of leaning into the characters as the offensive piece of your army?
I will say, with the exclusion of the 5-man Rubric squad, who do in fact exist to give the Infernal Master rerolls and some ablative wounds, and I feel like that trade is worth it. I feel like having 5 Rubrics for him, I'll pay 100 points to make sure that man lives and picks up everything he looks at. But when I look at something like a regular Infernal Master, some of the also just like other Exalted Sorcerers on disc, which sometimes get paired with Rubrics, I don't see the point. I feel like all that's doing is making a 200-point trading piece unit that ultimately, when an opponent gets to it, I've lost like 4-3 Cabal points on that interaction. I've lost 200 points. Every real unit in Thousand Suns, which includes a 5-man Rubric and a character, which is 220, 230 points, I just don't see the character as doing enough to have a reason to have 5 Rubrics hanging around, except for that Arcane Vortex guy. The rest of the time, I see the Rubrics and the characters there to supplement them. You know, Armin's extra Cabal point or extra once per game Cabal ritual is nice, but fundamentally, he's there so that his Rubric squad sees something on an objective and just says, stop existing.
And he does that by taking away their armor save and then just blocks them with 10 flamers with reroll wounds?
Yeah, 10 flamers, rerolling wounds, if you don't have an invuln save, picks up just about anything in the game. And it'll do serious work into just about, if I'd be wounding on 6s and then wounding on 5s with Armin, you're on an objective and I'm rerolling, it does like an average of 16 to 18 wounds on literally any unit in the game. And then turn off armor saves, or if it's on just a Chaos Demon's body that has a 4-up invuln, like, 9 wounds is still a substantial amount to just say, like, this is gonna happen.
Yeah. So that leads me into our kind of Cabal point section of this, because that's obviously a great combination of arm on joint and 10 rubrics. Just walk up, take away the armor save for free once per game, and then laid it up with +1 to wound claimers, reroll on wound on objectives. What other Cabal points and breakpoints are we hitting here? Like, are you doom bolting often, moving twice often? What is the plan for using Cabal points?
So, and I've talked about, because I basically will use doom bolt, which is, for anyone that doesn't know, you pick a unit with an 18 that a psyker can see, or 36 if you're a beast, and toss some mortals at something. I essentially use doom bolt as more of a utility spell if I see a lone op. If I can see something that Doombolt can easily snipe out, again, without me really losing something in return, then I'll use Doombolt for that. Aside from that, I still use Cabal points to supplement the rest of my army. The double move, Armin Squad normally sits somewhere within range that with a double move, they can see the whole center objective. And again, that's kind of like supplementing Armin's damage output by making sure he can get there. Then strip armor saves is supplementing damage output by making sure that my flamers always go through. I generally use Cabal points and stay at that breakpoint where I can do a double move and a strip. I can do 2 double moves with my 1 exalted sorcerer that will let me double cast. I try to use them in a way and keep those breakpoints where they can serve a purpose of allowing the rest of my army to function. I don't use Cabal points just to toss damage out every time I can see it, because supplementing my army will mean they do more damage than just a random doom bolt will do.
Interesting. I think a lot of Thousand Sons players get kind of fixated on, I can do 18 mortal wounds in one turn if I do this, 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 and this, and I can do it to your backfield, and they do all these jumping hula hoops and go crazy, and all of a sudden they've done 8 mortal wounds to a rhino behind a wall, and I get to move forward with my entire army and just slam the next turn. It's like, you lost the plot. It sounds like you're actually using Cabal points kind of just to supplement your army, like you said, not going for those crazy plays. One thing I find very overwhelming when I play Thousand Sons, which is few and far between, and often when I play against Thousand Sons, is they take forever in their command phase, right? Just thinking of all these plans and things they could do, pre-measuring this, that, and whatever, and they go through, I could do this line or that line or this line. And it's very overwhelming, you know, and they don't know necessarily how to approach it, or whether they've done the right line, or maybe they should have done the entire other approach to it. It doesn't sound like you have those kinds of issues, because your army is kind of working in a much more, this is what it's going to do strategy. Could you define that a little bit for us?
Yeah, no, I will say that I tend to very much, I'll spend, and of course I like to play on a clock, so I make sure I'm never taking up time that should be my opponent's, but I will spend a solid 5 minutes in my command phase kind of standing there and looking and thinking about, well, if I spend 6 Cabal points here and 7 here, you know, how's this going to work out? Which is just a thing you have to do as a T-Suns player, because before I make a single move, I have to determine, is this unit teleporting? What am I going to need Cabal points for? Where are my responses going? That is absolutely still a way that you have to play. The best I can really say is it does become easier with practice, which helps when I've put a lot of reps in with this army, because then you get to a point where you kind of have a more natural feel where you don't have to explicitly think about everything. It's a very natural way of playing the game where I know, okay, well, they're going to have to double move there, and I'm going to need a strip there, and then I'm going to need a free strat on Magnus because it got vected, which means I'll have to use the strip with Armin's free thing, and it does just kind of become more of a natural feeling longer you go with it, but you still do spend a good amount of time in your command phase and then sort of run through the rest of the turn.
Gotcha. I guess that's always going to be there with T-Suns. That just makes sense. What's kind of your playbook, I guess?
There's a couple of decent go-to moves. There's lots of shenanigans you can pull with stuff like probably 2 or 3 times at Cherokee and a couple times in like the past week, I've randomly drawn Capture Enemy Outpost. So you kind of adjust your plan based on the cards, but things like teleporting your Rubric Marines and then double moving them onto an objective, you can use them with Warp Sight to get the Magnus Airstrike. You know, I see a Tau Crisis brick behind a wall. I say, all right, well, now that brick, everything's going to target it indirectly. So like the main plays are sort of the big teleport, and you want to use that teleport as much as you can to get that line of sight, to be able to shoot a bunch of stuff, and to set them up in a position where it's going to be very hard for enemies to approach with their Overwatch. You also fall into positions where sometimes I'll double move an exalted guy on disc just so he can go see a unit. You know, he can use his half move nonsense, though that's only at the first end of the first move. Again, a lot of the fancy plays with T-Suns do come down to like that double move warp site play so that I can see something and I can say, I'm going to shoot that, because that's a very scary thing that I don't really want to have to face head on.
When you're allotting your Cabal point allocation, deciding what you're going to go for, there's so many different factors, right? Like you can do the double smooth warp site, blow something up play. You can get more aggressive with Doom Bolts if you really want. But you can also just use it to double move Zangors and go move block an area and steal an object. That doesn't lead to much damage at all, but it can buy you time and steal points. How does that play factoring into your repertoire?
Yeah, so a lot of time, the first thing you do when you're doing that command phase planning is say, what is the essential points I have to use this turn? If I need to get my secure no man's land turn one, but my spawn are a little far away, then you know the essential points are going to be, well, they have to double move. One other sort of play in that playbook, like you were talking about, things like double moving Zangors, double moving Rubrik Marines, because of the time phase it happens, a lot of times I will move them up to a wall when they could have like come out and move blocked with their normal move and then double move them, because that double move avoids Overwatch. You know, Redeemers eat your heart out because the double move happens at the beginning of the shooting phase. So I can still come around where most people can't and do move blocks on very scary Overwatch threats without it being a big deal. So that kind of thing where, you know, this is something you're going to have to do is the quote unquote reserved Cabal points, where it's, this is going to absolutely have to happen. And then other things kind of fill in around there once you know what else you're going to have left.
Gotcha. So damage almost comes secondary, actually, to just making sure you get your points accomplished and your move blocks done.
Yeah. As I say, every free resource is a good resource to pick up. But if I just walk around the board picking up every resource I can for free and never stand on an objective, that's still not a winning recipe.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So let's talk about how you actually approach the mission. Imagine with so few units, it's very hard to actually get tacticals. Zangors and spawns certainly help there, but they are not a perfect solution. How do you actually go about playing secondaries, choosing fixed versus tactical, and scoring it?
I actually find that tactical, at least to this list, because it has a decent amount of junk and it has a lot of flexibility, comes pretty naturally. You know, I think fixed is generally better. My rule is, if there is a ruin that I can stand behind to score homers in the center and my opponent gives something up, then I will take fixed every time. You know, if we're playing knights on GW terrain, I will be taking bring it down and homers. Any other time, the list is fairly comfortable piloting tactical, because stuff like the double move, the teleporting Rubrik squad, each of the two guys on disc who I don't have to overexert myself to prepare myself for, you know, investigate signals. I just have the movements and have the tricks that a lot of times I can sort of adjust myself. It's a flexible enough army that if you say, well, you need to pick up a character this turn, I'm like, well, Magnus can move across the entire board and pick that guy up this turn.
Right. And then in terms of managing scoring those points and like sniping out a character because the cards told you to, versus using your Cabal points and your plays to essentially actually help you win the long-term battle, is it as simple as always score the points, or is there times you sacrifice cards or don't go for things you could go for just to help you with your overall strategy?
I think with everything, it'll vary a little bit matchup to matchup, but we are an army that very much likes having the extra CP, because the more CP you have, the more warp site, the more blank saves, you know, the better you can play. CP is good, like everyone understands. If a secondary is only going to score me 2 to 4 points and it's early on in the game, even if it's basically a free secondary, if I'm going to be having something in the middle anyways, I will toss those points for the CP every time, because having that CP is what allows me on that turn between turn 2 and 4 to kind of have that sweep go turn over my opponent, where I pick up enough resources that now scoring secondaries at the end of the game is trivial. And if you keep your opponent off primary, it doesn't really matter. This list is very much a singles list. It is meant to consistently score 10 to 20 points more than your opponent. It's not a list that's like, I'm always going to score the maximum amount of points possible, because at the end of the day, if I have more points than you, I don't really care what the total was.
Right.
So I'm fine with sacrifice.
Push differentials in a team's environment or necessarily even keep it close where you would lose a blowout game. You just want to play the games you're going to play and win them solidly.
Yeah, as long as I win, if that CP means that I'm going to get 10 points by keeping you off primary because I could blank a save on Magnus, it's going to be worth more than the 2 to 3 points I could have gotten for little area denial.
For sure. I think that makes a lot of sense, Noah, and I'm very excited to see how well you piloted it and obviously how well you know the army. I think ultimately with Thousand Suns, more so than most factions, it comes down to the specific lines you take in the games you play on turns you have. So in part two of this show, we're going to talk about your actual games that you played, go through the matchups, the tactics, the strategies used in those games, and we're going to talk about exactly how you won the Cherokee Supermajor Open. So if you enjoyed this episode, you can catch that on AOW40K.com. That is our Patreon. Yeah, we've been doing this for 3 years. Your support is what fuels this show and allows us to keep producing it, along with all of our content on our board. So please do subscribe if you find this content helpful. It means the world to us, and let's keep doing it. Noah, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, man.
It's been a true pleasure. All right, listeners, join us on Patreon, and we'll see you next week.
Like what you just listened to? Check out Art of War Down Under and Art of War Unbroken on the Competitive 40K Network. TheArtOfWar40K.com.